Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Today, we're devoting the show to Latino films and filmmaking. Later in the program, we're going to be talking to Catherine Galan. She's the executive director of NALIP, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ryan Pierce Williams. He is writer and director of the film The Dry Land, which won awards at the Edinburgh Film Festival and the Dallas Film Festival, and it was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance. And it is screening tonight, the 16th of August, at the CCA here in Santa Fe. It's part of NALIP's annual Latino Producers Academy, and it will also be at the Albuquerque Film Festival starting on the 26th of August. Welcome, Ryan, to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you very much.
So this is a film, it's very, very good. It's a wonderful film about a veteran who returns to Texas from Iraq. And he returns to basically a loving family, good friends, a working class job, pretty tough job, and major post-traumatic stress. How did you write the story? Is it based on something real, on experiences or people that you know?
You know, I actually I was turned on to the subject matter about 5 years ago when I was when I read a newspaper article about a man who had returned home from the war, and I was struck by this article because this man had served his country, he had fought in some really tough battles in Iraq, and had come home and was dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, and his whole life just fell apart as a result of it. So I was deeply, deeply affected by this article, and it really sparked a 2-year journey for me of researching the material, researching what it was like for soldiers coming home. I spoke to many, many women who had returned home from the war, and also family members, and just to be more socially aware of what was happening. And what I found out through that research was that, you know, the story of people coming home with post-traumatic stress disorder was happening more and more often. So that 2 years of research turned into me realizing I had a story that I wanted to tell, and I developed it into a script. So it really came out of a deep amount of empathy for the struggle, for, you know, some of the struggles that soldiers and their families are facing, when they return home from this war.
Well, it's a very realistic and sensitive depiction of the emotions that come up and the kinds of situations that come up. And part of the premise is, which I found fascinating, is that the main character, James, can't remember the very event that traumatized him. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that happening very often. You know, a lot of times the traumatic event will, soldiers or anybody really, will block out elements of it. And, you know, in this film, James, the main character, was in a very traumatic event, and he goes on a journey to really understand what happened. I did find out that definitely that happens more often than not, where certain elements will be blocked out. And in James's case, he can't remember anything from the event.
And then it becomes the arc of the movie becomes a journey to find out what happened. And, you know, there are a lot of movies where you want to find out a family secret. In this case, it's his own secret. What are the challenges, I guess you would call it, of writing and shooting a film about emotional trauma? I would think that there's all kinds of balances that you're always having to strike between showing too much and showing too little.
Definitely. You know, what I wanted to do with this film was allow the audiences to feel like they were in James's shoes. And I wanted to create a story that that the audience basically comes home with James as he comes home. And as we go further and further in the film, I hope that I've created a story that allows the audience to feel the emotions he's feeling at the same time. And, you know, by not giving away what happened in this event, And having James search for this information at the same time the audience is searching for this information, I hope that it creates a very active kind of viewing experience where the audience is waiting to find out, just as James is waiting to find out what happened in this event, with the ultimate goal of really, hopefully, allowing the audience to, like I said before, feel what it feels like to be in his shoes. But that's, you know, it's a very difficult task to do that. I think the first thing that is required, you know, is a willing audience. You know, you need an audience that's going to go in and follow you on this journey, and be open to really sitting in this character's shoes. And so, you know, that's always that can be a challenge, but it's also, I think, just a challenge trying to find honesty and portraying these characters and these events in a very authentic way, which, you know, I've tried very hard to portray as authentic as possible.
And very successfully so, I must say. And one of the things that I think it does well, I mean, war is by and large all about men and warriors and all of that. But as your film shows, at least to some extent, it's also really hard on women who have nothing to do with the war itself, but who bear so many of the scars and burdens of war. And I'm really glad that the wife and the mother of James were real characters in this film.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you know, for me, this story is just as much about the soldier as it is about the family that's left behind at home and who are also fighting a battle. So what I hope that this movie is a real coming home story, not only about the soldiers, you know, the effects of war that are bared by the soldier, but also the effects that the war has had on his family and friends and his wife. You know, I think that it's so often that the wives and the mothers and the husbands, the people at home that are at home supporting the soldier while he or she is away, they're oftentimes forgotten. And what I was really hoping to do with this film is bring light to their struggle as well. You know, the movie focuses on James, the soldier, but through his journey and his experiences when he comes home, you see how difficult it's been for his family and his friends as well. So that was very important for me to really show in this film, make it more of a world view of the effects of this war on, you know, everybody, and not just
the
soldier.
Well, and it's, I mean, I have to say, one is struck with the colossal and tragic waste of life and talent and money and time that is war. You know, there's so much lost and arguably so little gained. And although you don't make any political statements about that, it definitely provides food for the whole conversation about war itself.
Yeah, you know, I hope that this movie, you know, one of my biggest goals was to not have any kind of political agenda at all in this film. And I want you to just feel what it feels like to be in these people's shoes. And I don't have any message that I'm trying to shove down the audience's throat, but it does, it is, you know, I think anything that has any kind of elements that deal with the war is automatically political in some way. You know, for me, I think the most important idea that the movie hopefully conveys is that no matter what your belief is about the war, you know, either pro or anti, one thing that we have to do is find a way to support our soldiers that are returning home from the war, that have served their country, that have volunteered to fight for our country, you know. And and you know, this film follows a soldier on a very tough journey back home, but you know, hopefully it really sheds light on his hardships that he faces as he comes back home, and really enlightens the audience to think about the kind of support we give soldiers when they return home, and then the need for more support. So
yeah. We're talking to Ryan Pierce Williams about the film The Dry Land, which is screening tomorrow at the CCA here in Santa Fe, the Center for Contemporary Arts. Now, you have some amazing actors in this film, some very well-known artists like America Ferreira, Wilmer Valderrama, and Ryan Onan, who I'd never seen or heard of, playing the lead.
Yeah.
How did you cast this film?
You know, that's a really long story, but I'll try and make it short for you. America, she was an executive producer of the movie from the first time I really told her about the idea. You know, while I was doing research still, before I even started writing the script, I had talked to her about the idea, and she really thought it was a good idea and wanted to be a part of it. So she came on as a creative producer, you know, in the way that she helped protect the vision of the story and the film throughout the whole process. But it wasn't until after we cast Ryan Onan that she came on board to play the role of Sarah. I hadn't written the role for her or with her in mind. And funny enough, we actually had sent the script to a couple of our mutual friends to see if they wanted to play the role of Sarah. But as we were developing the script, America fell in love with the part of Sarah and decided that you know, she would really like to take it on. So after she came on board, you know, like I said, I had already cast Ryan Onan. We took the script to Melissa Leo, who plays the role of James's mom. And Melissa, I had just seen her in a film called Frozen River that she was nominated for the, you know, Best Actress, you know, Academy Award for that year. And she read the script and sent me an email and said that she had read 12 pages and that she wanted me to know that she wanted to do the movie. And she also reassured me that she'd finished reading the script, but she was very excited about it only 12 pages in. And then everybody else came on board in a very, you know, interesting way. Wilmer Valderrama, Ryan and I met him for coffee one day, and I was immediately struck by him. I had seen his work in the past, but I didn't know about his connection with the military. And what he told us is that he had been traveling with the USO for several years. He had been to 9 different countries, Iraq and Afghanistan being 2 of those countries, and had spent a lot of time with soldiers and was really invested in supporting the troops. And I was just really struck by his dedication to really supporting our troops. You know, I also thought he was pretty funny, as we all do. but also that he had the dramatic chops to pull off this role. So after we met with him, we offered him the role. And you know, everybody else came on board in similar ways. Some people had to audition, and some people we met through just sitting down with them. I think the funniest story is probably the way that we found Ryan Onan, the lead, the guy that plays James. My casting director had actually told me about him 9 months prior to me meeting him, and I thought he sounded like a really interesting guy. He didn't have much work under his belt, and so I kind of, you know, blew the idea off. At the time, we were looking for an actor that could possibly help us get financing, even though that wasn't necessarily the route that I wanted to go with the role. But after having no luck with that, I went to a poker game, you know, and this was 9 months after my casting director had mentioned Ryan to me, and in walks Ryan Onan and sits right next to me. And it's so funny because I didn't know that he knew my friends. I didn't think we had any connection at all. And we just got paired together, you know, at this random poker game and started talking. And I sent him the script, and one thing led to another, and I ended up casting him in the movie, which it just shows you kind of the magic of filmmaking.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed. That's very funny. Well, and yeah. In a film like this, in any film, but especially a film like this, there really needs to be chemistry among the various people. Like, for example, the guy who plays James and his sister, they look alike. They look like brother and sister. They have the same body language even. You know, it's very well done. And the chemistry between James and his wife, Sarah, is also, you know, good enough that you feel that they love each other and that the scars that come from war can potentially drive them apart and all of that.
Yeah.
You are showing the film to veterans and active duty soldiers. Tell us about this. What's it like for them and for you to be showing them this film?
It's been an incredible process. You know, we showed the movie at Fort Carson a couple weeks ago, and we're going to show the movie. We're showing the movie to soldiers at Fort Bliss also, and our Fort Carson screening was just unbelievable. I was very nervous going into the screening of when you're showing people a movie or anything that represents something that they may or may have gone through or may know somebody that's gone through. It's always a little nerve-wracking, but after the screening, it was such an we just received such an incredible amount of support, and there were so many people that came up to us that talked to us about how they connected with the film or how they knew somebody that was going through the events that we portrayed in the film, and it was very touching. I think the most amazing moment was when a soldier stood up after the film had ended, and he said that had been in Afghanistan and that he had never admitted it before in public, but that he had gone to get help for his you know mental wounds when he got back to Fort Carson, and he was a leader of many of the men that were in the room, and you know he just told everyone, I strongly encourage anybody in here that's going through anything that's similar to what I went through to go get help for it. And that was just amazing, because I don't know if he would have ever said anything in public had we not brought the movie there. And it was a really touching moment. But you know, I think we've actually received the best feedback from soldiers and their families. I've heard so many times how honest this movie feels to them and how it really tells the story accurately, and you know that's what's important to me, is that I give you know that I did some kind of justice and I brought some kind of truth to a story that is actually about real people. I think the hardest audience to sometimes appeal to is a general public who's not necessarily in tune with these more difficult stories of returning home. Oftentimes there's such a big disconnect between what the public thinks they know and what is actually happening, and that's been quite interesting to see as well. You know, we've gotten some criticism from some people about the film maybe feeling overly dramatic, and in the same breath I'll hear a soldier say, wow, that's not even the worst case scenario, and this feels so honest. And so it's interesting for me to see and hear the response to our film, and it's provided some insight into just kind of where we are as a society and how in touch we are with what our troops are going through.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I would think that part of the challenge is just getting people in the door, getting them to go. I mean, we just had the folks on who, one guy who made the film Restrepo, which is about...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so one guy who was in it and one of the filmmakers were here with me in the cafe because it just screened recently in Santa Fe, and we're talking about it. And the soldier, the former soldier, said that sometimes soldiers don't really want to see realistic depictions of the war because it's too close to home. They kind of want to get away from it. And so that I would think that's part of the challenge as well.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before, but I'm sure that's true. You know, I'm sure that's very true. I think you know, soldiers, like everybody in this world, they're all very different. You know, and some people are going to want to see movies about war, and some are not. But I think as a filmmaker, what I hope to achieve is a story that does not portray the universal experience of somebody coming home. I mean, by no means does this film say that everyone that comes home goes through this kind of circumstance. But, you know, for the people that are going through dealing with PTSD and other effects of war. I hope that this film feels honest to them and is something that they can connect with. And you know, I think that this issue goes beyond just the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. I mean, this is an issue that we've been dealing with for decades, you know, or probably even
this
longer
is a,
than that.
We've been dealing with this for millennia. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I think ever since man has been fighting, we've been dealing with the effects of that. And certainly, you can look back to World War One and Two and Vietnam and say that there were many soldiers, a lot of soldiers that came back with these, you know, harsh effects as well. We just weren't in a place as a society to really talk about them and to deal with them. And hopefully now we're beginning to address these issues more head on. But,
well, you know, I think what you said a moment ago, which is here's this commander standing up in the theater saying, "I sought help." It's really quite stigmatized. It's a stigma for people in the military, and in fact, all throughout government. I mean, there are people who are applying for government jobs who won't go to therapy because they feel that they will be stigmatized even for a civil service job. I mean, it's a very big stigma all across the board. And, you know, as a woman, I mean, women are just as much victims of post-traumatic stress syndrome, not through war, but through rape and everything else. And in a way, you know, one of the things I was thinking about while watching this is, by seeking help and setting a model for seeking help through rape crisis centers and things like that, that is part of what's changing in society as well. You don't show that in the movie, but the fact that these men are saying, "I sought help," is part of a much larger society-wide movement.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we showed this movie to the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Casey, and after he watched it, he came up to us and thought the movie was very well done and thought that we could help reduce the stigma against mental wounds with the film. And you know, that's what I hope this does, is really brings awareness to these issues and hopefully gives people the sense that it's everybody goes through some kind of tough time, whether you've been at war or not, and it's okay to address the issues that you have, and it's okay to talk about them and seek help for them, and in many cases it's the only way to really survive is if you ask for help. So I hope that this film offers a hopeful ending and a hopeful message that no matter how difficult it may be or how tough the times or situations may be, that there's always hope that things can turn around.
Well, I have to say also, and we do not by any means intend to give away the ending in any way, but I felt that the ending was so well handled because it is both hopeful and not, you know, not pretty. And
yeah. What I like to say is it's a realistic hope. You know, this isn't a Hollywood ending, but it's not a horrible ending as either. It really, you know, at the end, it hopefully gives the audience a sense that there is hope that this guy is going to be able to pick up and find the help that he needs. But it's definitely going to be a tough journey. It's not going to be something that's pretty or easy. And that I think is the truth for many people who are dealing with PTSD or really any hardship in life. You know, the alternative is sometimes a lot easier. If suicide or death is oftentimes an easier way out. I don't think that's the message we want to portray. But you know, the idea that this, and I pretty much just given away the end now. But this, you know, he does find hope, and he does find light, and he finds that there is going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough road, but that he chooses life, and he chooses that he's going to, you know, find help, and it really takes community. You know, it takes that the support of people around you to help in those dark times.
And if I may say, it also takes a good dog.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a great dog in that movie.
Yeah, there's a good dog in the movie.
So, Ryan Pierce Williams is the writer and director of the film The Dry Land, which is part of the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, NALIP. They are here in Santa Fe once again for their annual Latino Producers Academy, and they're doing a special screening of this film tonight at 8:30, and that is at the CCA in Santa Fe, the Center for Contemporary Arts. And the film also opens at the Albuquerque Film Festival on the 26th of August. And Ryan, also, we're delighted that you're going to be here for the screening and also for the Albuquerque Film Festival. That's terrific. You'll be here doing Q&A and stuff like that.
I will, definitely. I'll be on hand and definitely willing to answer and talk to anybody that has any questions.
Ryan Pierce Williams, thanks for the wonderful film and thanks for spending the time with us here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
And we're going to go out with a little clip right now from the film The Dry Land.
Need to see a doctor, man?
Is this an emergency?
James Scott, Colonel Evans. Honorable discharge.
Yes, sir.
How long you been out?
A couple of weeks.
So you got yourself into a little trouble. What happened to your head?
Got in an argument, sir.
Looks like a pretty bad argument.
Should have seen him, sir.
I'm gonna get you cleaned up. Is that all you're here for today?
Oh, that's part of it.
You want to tell me the other part?
Been on edge. Mood swings, that sort of thing.
You drink?
Not that much.
Says here you don't drink at all.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say too much.
You involved in any serious attacks?
My, vehicle was hit. Two men were killed. Three of us survived.
What happened?
I can't really remember.
Nothing leading up to the hit or after?
I remember us stopping, sound of screaming, and feeling the RPG. But after that, there's nothing.
You mentioned any of this on your exit examination?
I didn't want to hold up coming home.
Any suicidal thoughts?
No. No, not at all. You know what's wrong?
I got an idea.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Catherine Galan. She's the executive director of NALIP, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers. I'm very happy now to welcome Catherine Galan. She is the executive director of the National Association of Independent Latino Producers, also called NALIP. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Marichelle. Really nice to be back.
It's great to have you back. You were here about a year ago and once again are here in New Mexico with the Latino Producers Academy. What's that all about?
Well, it's our eighth Latino Producers Academy, our third year here in New Mexico. This is a professional development program for Latino, Native American, and New Mexican writers, producers, and directors. We have a 10-day residential program for directors, first of documentaries, first of all. We're working on public television and social change documentaries on a variety of subjects. And then in the second half, we welcome producers and directors of narrative independent features who have a whole separate program to prepare their features and their films to go into production.
And so with those two, what kind of support does the Academy give these filmmakers?
Well, we really do a professional development program that's soup to nuts because artists need a safe place to develop their skills, advance their relationships, really think about their projects. So the documentary makers have a raft of mentors that come in to work on their proposals on their narrative structure, on their fundraising trailers, on the way that they're going to finish and complete and score their films, how their market and their outreach and really maximize the impact that they hope to accomplish with their projects. The narrative filmmakers, the directors receive professional casts from the Screen Actors Guild, professional crews and mentors, and they have the opportunity to rehearse, to shoot, and to edit scenes from their upcoming feature, so they're really prepared. The producers we work with on everything that they need to fundraise and prepare to support a director and realize the vision of an independent feature in the marketplace.
So an independent filmmaker who's making, for example, a narrative film and they've never worked with professional actors before, what a privilege for them.
It's a rare opportunity, a really very special one. The only other place that sort of duplicates this idea is the Sundance program for directors, which has invited a couple of Latino and Native producer and directors over the years, but not many. So we really do this exclusively for them to have that chance before they're there with the huge crews and the big budgets and not had yet had that opportunity to practice, in a sense, and assemble their creative thoughts and style.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, having been working with the Santa Fe Film Festival on this program and you at NALIP and all the other kind of independent films that come through the screen and the CCA and the film festival, independent films are, by and large, so much better than big-budget films.
Well, they take on challenging subjects. They are willing to be risky creatively on subject matter, psychologically oftentimes. But our program developed in the same way that Robert Redford and our founder, Moctezuma Esparza, first developing the Sundance Screenwriting Lab, which was looking at the independent landscape. And there are many independent films that are made and even go to film festivals but don't receive releases. And had they had some advice, some mentoring, some input, some support in those early days of before they finalized their script and made their director and creative choices, there are other films that could have been even more successful. And so it's part of our ambition that not only do we help them launch these films, but that we launch them well, sensitive to the marketplace, sensitive to the opportunities to make their funding back, and to have their creativity and their message reach audiences and to enjoy them.
What's the market for documentaries like these days?
Well, documentaries have had a boom time over the last few years. More people have been attending them in the theaters, and more channels have begun showing them. Of course, public television has always been the major funder and supporter of that, with series like Independent Lens and POV American Documentary. But they've been joined in the marketplace with documentaries being seen now on HBO and IFC and Discovery and other places. So I think that there's a great appetite and interest for independent films. And then you also have Netflix and other places that films can be discovered and found by audiences that may not have them or may not catch them in the art film theaters if they come there. It's more economical for a filmmaker to have their documentary reach an audience actually without going into the theaters, because the marketing of that is very expensive and the fees that they have to pay. So a lot of what documentary makers are doing these days is creating their audiences even as they make their films. They're reaching out to finding those interest groups, those advocacy groups, those communities that are going to be interested, and they follow the film as it's being made, may even invest in it a few dollars or given notices of that it's coming so that they can support it when it arrives in whatever platform it arrives on.
The world has changed so much since perhaps you and I were very small or you know, in the 50s when, what was it, 70% of Americans watched I Love Lucy.
It was very and homogeneous everybody, viewing, I mean, public.
Mm-hmm. And so you kind of had a sense, you could put your finger on the pulse of what people of the United States were looking at, mm-hmm. reading, listening to, and so on. And right now, it's this interesting world where there are perhaps hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people following a film that the rest of the world has never heard of and will never hear of. And so all these little kind of cultural subgroups exist and are proliferating.
It's really very true, and social networking and the multi-platform opportunities are what are making that possible. And, you know, actually that's exciting because filmmakers really want to reach audiences. They want to have their message and their art connect with a wider group than themselves because they're observing a phenomenon. They want to change something. They want to tell an important story, reflect the needs and interests of a community. So that there are now all of these new ways to reach that community, those many communities, I think is really exciting for them. But they also have to harness and tap it. So, you know, we find for both the narrative and the documentary filmmakers that we mentor now that there is a whole new dimension that they need to learn from the very beginning of thinking about how they will market, how they will build that audience, how they will reach them. Because the relying on the fact that they may be discovered at a festival or that they may at an A-plus festival anyway, or that they may receive a big advance or that there may be a big investment in their going into theaters is an option, of course, but there's so many other options that they can take more charge of and plan for and budget for and raise money for and ultimately be more effective, that they need to start thinking about that and being aware of those opportunities.
And as they think about that and become aware of those opportunities, I mean, okay, there are some people in film getting rich, we know, in Hollywood and so on, but are these folks, if not getting rich, okay, they're not, but making a living, are they able to continue to allow their work to pay them?
Well, there's a big they there.
Yeah.
Big they. And filmmakers often have to make that choice between working in something as a profession or as the thing that they do for love that's ancillary to their day job. There certainly are professionals that are working in both film and television and documentaries, and documentary makers are finding their skills very translatable into reality television, into some of these channel stations that are doing beautiful work in nature documentaries and news and all sorts of things that this training then prepares them for. So the challenge, though, certainly for the independent filmmaker always is making a return on their investment in a film, and it's not always monetary. Sometimes it's their career, sometimes it's raising awareness about an issue, and it's not a big salary. But there are other parts of the distribution process that are putting coin directly into their pocket, or that we hope will, that some of these new media platforms that where people can pay, even if it's a little bit, that will accrete into enough money to at least help them pay back their investors and move on to a new project.
And what are some of these new media platforms you're talking about?
Well, there are the filmmakers that have created websites that are selling their DVDs themselves, that are joining streaming platforms, that are paying them, that some of those are the Amazons on demand and the Netflix on demand, and other ways that they can apportion their distribution rights so that they're not simply handing them over to one distributor, which is sometimes the dream of a filmmaker, but is not always the most economical for them or their investors, because where some platform like selling it to HBO may bring them a large advance or a large amount of money, the distributor is going to take from that any losses and expenses that they have spent, for example, releasing it theatrically or releasing it internationally. So where filmmakers are holding on to these rights and divvying them up and controlling some of them themselves, selling DVDs out of their website, out of their trunk, if they're
right,
a social change documentary maker, selling them to groups, those are ideas that are beginning to pay off a bit for the filmmakers.
We're talking to Catherine Galan of the National Association of Latino Independent Producers about the Latino Producers Academy, which is happening right now in Santa Fe. It goes on for several weeks. And in fact, tonight we're going to see the film, of course, that we just talked about a few minutes ago, The Dry Land. What are some of the themes that people are working on in the films that you see at the Academy?
Well, we are a Latino Producers Academy, so the artists are coming out of that broad but specific group of artists that have grown up in Miami, in Texas, in New York. We have a couple of filmmakers that are from the large Mexican Latino community in Chicago. And they are telling really a variety of different kinds of stories, which is I'm very excited about. There are comedies, there are thrillers, there are some that are border stories, but there's some that are about gangs, there are some that are telling stories that are about monster trucks and lesbians down at El Paso. So there's really a refreshing variety of narrative topics. And the same is true of the documentaries. Some are very specifically about either the Native or Latino community, but there's another about hungry children and the hunger issue in New Mexico, and another about land and water resources and traditions that are part of New Mexico. So there really is a tremendous variety about what's going on this year.
Do we have some New Mexican filmmakers in this group?
Oh, we certainly do. We have them both in the narrative and in the documentary program. I mentioned Land, Water, People, Time, which is a project that is being developed by three New Mexican filmmakers, actually, and a project on hungry children, which is also being developed by a filmmaker here. We have a third project by a filmmaker, a director and editor who live here, Eric Maddox, who are doing a project about the struggle at the border and his observations. So it's part personal and part very illuminating about the stories and the struggles of the immigration issue down at the border.
And just to point out, it's not just Latino filmmakers, it's non-Latino filmmakers doing films about Latino issues.
That's also true, and New Mexican filmmakers are doing films about things of concern to them in particular.
Right.
We're very excited to welcome a director who is here from Las Cruces, who will be directing scenes from her upcoming film in the narrative program as well. We have two women directors this year, and one is a New Mexican who's telling a story about two people that leave one part of the country, the South probably, and are heading up towards the North. So it's really not rooted in New Mexico per se, but she's a New Mexican filmmaker.
Well, it's wonderful, I think, that New Mexican filmmakers can get to know also filmmakers from other part of the country, because sometimes even within, for example, Latinos, Hispanics living in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, they might not know their counterparts in California or New York.
Right. It's very much about building community and a network, and this is a collaborative medium, documentary and narrative both, and you really need to draw on resources and ideas and support, which the new media world has made easier, but being able to be here in residence, in collaboration, over breakfast, having a beer, talking about advancing it, working with editors, hashing out your ideas, drawing on other people's experiences, it really builds a very special artist community that we believe builds a stronger field in general.
And you've been doing it, Nalip has been around for over 10 years and presumably will be going on for many years to come. And it'll be so interesting to see how the world of Latino filmmaking develops. One thing that we've seen and that I think we talked about a little bit last year is that some of the stereotypes of Latinos in film and TV, I mean, they're still there, but there's a lot more going on besides those stereotypes.
There certainly has been a lot of progress in our first 10 years in seeing television shows and movies where the roles are more professional, they're more reflective of society, both in comedy and family and drama. Dora the Explorer is celebrating her 10th year, and that's a landmark show that's teaching lots of people Spanish all over the world, actually. So we are very proud and pleased to see that. There are still needs and a lot of work to do as far as representation of writers, directors, producers, executives, decision makers, the talent that's behind the camera. And that also very much impacts the subject matter and the balance of stories and characters in everything that you see.
And writers, directors, producers, as the groups that are, for example, in the Latino Producers Academy now, as they mature, one hopes that they will move into positions of more power and be able to help other people.
Very much so. I mean, that's been the tradition of our industry, is that the more advanced artists bring the others along and are mentors. And we tap into many of our senior maker mentors, but we need more of them because they're the ones that can nurse and inspire and inform and bring along that next generation.
So social change is very much part of what's going on. What are some of the real social change themes that you're seeing, not only this year, but in the past?
Well, the documentary makers are very much involved with social change issues themselves. As I say, they're looking at hunger. They're looking at the injustice of a trial, and they're looking at environmental issues, they're looking at community political issues and figures that have transformed the social landscape. Actually, from our vantage, most any Latino story bringing awareness to a story is a social change.
Right.
act, you know, because media justice, media representation, diversity, awareness, I think makes us have more peace, more complex and representational democracy. We looked at a film during this past week called The Longoria Affair, which will be aired in November on Independent Lens, which is about basically the founder of the Chicano civil rights movement in Texas, which was back in the 40s and 50s, a story that many people are not aware of in any way that intersected with President Johnson and when he was a then-senator and how the civil rights movement was really developed for Latinos. And just the fact of telling that story and bringing that awareness to this generation of Latinos, of American citizens, of viewers, is an act of courage and importance for us.
We're going to be seeing this movie tonight at the CCA called The Dry Land by Ryan Pierce Williams, and we talked to earlier this morning. Tell us about how you are bringing this screening to New Mexico.
Well, part of our mission is to bring an awareness of Latino media and of new independent cinema to the world, and in this instance to Santa Fe, where we have so kindly been hosted and based. So while this is a private program for artists that apply to participate, we try to have this one public event that the community can share in. And The Dry Land, apart from being a wonderful film that Ryan Pierce Williams has written and directed, and we're really very pleased that he'll be joining us tonight to talk about it as a piece of independent media making, which is so inspiring to the producers and directors that we have in our program. It's co-produced and stars America Ferrara, who is a past fellow of the LPA, spent 2 years as a fellow at the LPA as a performer, and is also, you know, an important part of our community, who has developed so many wonderful roles, this one being very different.
And she's amazing in this. She's very, very good in this.
Well, she's a stunning actress. Yeah. So compelling, so gifted, and clearly feels safe and really has an important story to tell here. And, you know, that's another part of our advocacy work, which is seeing Latinas and Latinos in many different vantages, that here is intersecting with the veterans' rights movement and the peace movement. And we want to be sure that the community feels welcome and invited to come and share this with us.
You also have, the Academy also includes Native American filmmakers, and of course, as we've talked about, the borderline between Latino and Native American is kind of a false one in some ways. And so tell us about some of the Native
American. In some regards, projects. I mean, our Academy does welcome Native Americans to apply, and as well as New Mexicans. And we were very excited this year to invite three terrific filmmakers and their teams. Billy Luther is finishing a project called Grab, which is about Grab Day celebration. Very, very secret, very wonderful film. You'll be seeing it soon, we're sure. He's here with his editor. Michelle Danforth has a terrific story about lacrosse, which is one of the oldest Native American games and is still very much present and follows it all the way through a championship game where there's a new national team that's competing. And a third project, which is quite serious and challenging, about the struggles of women on reservations, but that we can be an incubation and a place to support their stories as well is important to us and our funders, and we were delighted to have them here this year.
Catherine Galan is the executive director of the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, NALIP. They're on the web at nalip.org, and the Latino Producers Academy is in progress right now, and once again, the film is tonight at the CCA called The Dry Land. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope we see you again this time next year.
We look forward to coming back. Thank you, Michelle.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.